You know, I have a lot of preacher friends that say they steer away from the book of Revelation. It's not an easy text to preach on. Several years ago, I was on the Isle of Patmos, where apparently this revelation came to John. And just like most holy sites, they claim this is the cross Jesus was crucified on, you know, this is the place. But I always say I wasn't far from where John was, even if it wasn't the place. But we went in a cave, and I remember touching the walls of the cave, and I said, Lord, give me revelation, three good sermons when I get back to the States. But you know, I have to confess that this sermon that I'm about to deliver was probably the most difficult one that I struggled with for over three decades of ministry. And I wrote it, and I rewrote it, and I prayed about it, and I went back to it. And really, up until last night, I was still thinking about what I wanted to say this morning. You know, some events in human history impact us so great that it becomes engraved in the recesses of our mind for the rest of our lives. And something that when we got the news of that event, we knew exactly where we were and what we were doing when that notice came to us. For example, I could vividly remember sitting in a junior high school class, junior high school 50 in Brooklyn, and the announcement came over the speakers that President Kennedy was shot and killed in Dallas, Texas. Now, for you, those of you old enough, can you remember where you were when you first heard that news? And I thought to myself, the class was stunned, we were dismissed, sent home, and I kept thinking to myself, how could this happen today? Now, that was 1963, but I said, that was Lincoln and McKinley. I mean, how could President Kennedy be shot and assassinated? And we were all stunned by that. Another example, I could vividly remember sitting in the living room watching a black and white TV when the first man stepped on the surface of the moon. Do you remember that? That was 1969. I had just gotten out of the Army, and it was very new to me. And Neil Armstrong, he stepped off that ladder, you remember? And there's a conspiracy that it was all filmed in a lab in Texas or something. He stepped on the moon, and you remember what he said? He said, that's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind. And history was made. Hundreds of thousands of people were watching that as it took place, watching it on TVs all over the world. And I can remember exactly where I was when I watched that moment in history. Certain events just stick in your mind. Now, some of you might be old enough to remember when you received the news that Pearl Harbor was attacked. Now, I know that's a long time ago. That was before my time, but certainly it wasn't before my parents' time. And that horrible news. In fact, I can only imagine what Kenny Schultz's family was going through, knowing that a son, a brother, was stationed in Pearl Harbor, and they weren't sure exactly his status, and we now know that he was killed. These things have a way of sticking with us. Do you remember where you were and what you were doing when you received the news that the World Trade Center was struck by a commercial airliner? Can you remember what you were doing when you heard that news? You know, after the first plane struck the North Tower, I was thinking that it was an aviation catastrophe, that somebody just navigated off course and slammed into the North Tower. But I want to tell you, we all knew when the second plane struck the South Tower, it was a terrorist attack or some kind of attack on our nation. You know, the first airliner, and why do I preach on this today, is because this coming Saturday will be the 20th anniversary of that terrible, horrific day in the life of the history of our nation. That first airliner, American Airlines Flight 11, flew out of Boston, headed for LA, had 81 passengers and 11 crew members on board that flight who were incinerated upon impact. And then the second airliner, United Airlines Flight 175, also out of Boston, headed for Los Angeles, had 56 passengers and 9 crew members. And they were dealt the same fate as the American Airlines flight before them. You see, the North Tower was struck between the 93rd and the 99th floors of that building. No one from the 93rd floor up would escape. There was no way out. There was no way navigating through a stairwell. There was no help coming with a helicopter. They were stuck in that tower, that burning inferno of jet fuel. The South Tower was struck between floors 77 and 85, so anybody above the 77th floor or thereabouts also could not escape that terrible fire. Forever embedded in my mind to this very day are those poor souls who had to jump to their deaths. They had a choice, either be burned to death or jump. What a choice to make. Several of them held hands to encourage one another to make that leap to their deaths. That terrifying image just is etched in my mind and in my soul. Forever engraved in my mind is the photographs of those firefighters, those brave firefighters, climbing the stairwell with that heavy equipment while innocent civilians were fleeing down that same stairwell. There's one photograph in particular that stuck with me. It shows you just a young firefighter looking up when someone snapped his photo, and he never made it out. 343 firefighters perished that day. 70 police officers from various, and some 3,000 people. I hope we never forget 9/11. I know it's easy to say, well, you know what, we got to move on. No, we don't move on. We remember. You know, every 9/11, every September 11th, I travel down to Lower Manhattan on Spring Street to the FDNY Museum to pay tribute to a friend of mine who was killed on that day. We served in the Army together. He was a firefighter. He was a fire marshal, the first fire marshal, FDNY, killed in the line of duty. He died in that South Tower. And to this day, I remain in touch with his family, his mother, his brother, his children. And this coming Saturday, I will see them once again down on Spring Street. A sad day, a sad moment. But we do it because we choose not to forget. You know, one of the things September 11 taught me was the tough lesson that life is very fragile and there are no guarantees about today, tomorrow, in this life. It's fragile and very delicate and very precious. My friend Ronnie went to work that morning as a fire marshal, just like he did every other morning. He checked into his office. He was going to go out to the Bronx to investigate what might have been an arson when over the radio, the dispatch said, there was a terrible accident at the World Trade Center. And so he rushes off to Lower Manhattan and he ran up 77 flights because he was a marathon runner. And Ronnie started to give triage and first aid to the burned and the wounded up there because he was also a registered nurse. You know, then the haunting thoughts start playing games in my head. What was Ronnie thinking at those final moments when he heard the thundering noise of those floors above him pancaking down like a stack of cards? I think my buddy Ronnie knew. He knew what was about to happen. And I also believe he didn't stop treating the wounded up there either. And he perished on that day. And at that very moment, his wife became a widow, and his son and daughter were fatherless at that very moment in time. As we watched that tower collapse, my buddy was in there. Never to walk his daughter down the aisle, never to see his children have children and grandchildren born into this world, and never to see his son earn his Green Beret as his dad did before him. You know, certain events in life just grip you. They just stick with you as long as you have breath in your lungs. Some of the things, you know, this is not a pat on the back for me. Please, I don't receive it as such. But some of the experience and thoughts from my experiences down at Ground Zero for 3 months, I choose to try and forget, and the others I cherish, because I saw this country pulled together from all over the world working to do the right thing down at Ground Zero. You know, another thing I remember, church, the first Sunday after 9/11, the church was packed, standing room only. I had never seen that before. But people had come because they were confused, they were scared, they needed to be comforted, they were looking for answers. How could this happen in their beloved country? Because let us not forget Shanksville and the Pentagon as well. We lost people there as well. Now for me, my experience is just focused on the World Trade Center and the pile and the terrible events that happened just an hour away from where we're seated this morning. But I want to tell you that surge in attendance was short-lived. I was thinking that the church is going to stay packed forever. But it didn't last, Carolyn. As the regular TV programming started, and there wasn't a 24-hour-a-day diet of 9/11 coverage, as the regular programming came back on the screens, I noticed more and more people not showing up at church. Why is that? Well, I'm going to surmise and just guess people became comfortable again. They weren't comfortable. We were jarred out of our comfort zone when those towers came down. But now, things are starting to settle in. I Love Lucy is back on again on MeTV. And I could relax a little bit. I don't think I'm going to go to church. Why is it? It's a rhetorical question. Why is it that it takes tragedy to turn us back to God? Why is it that something catastrophic has to happen in our lives for us to get on our knees and seek the face of God? You know, the Barna Research Study Group did a study, and they indicated that over half of the Americans said that it was their faith that got them through the 9/11 events. Faith. And I believe that, because it certainly was true for me. But for many, they once again didn't make faith a priority in their lives. And this is what Barna went on to say in his study, and I'm going to quote it. He said, "I was among those who fully expected to see an intense spiritual reaction to the terror attacks. The fact that we saw no lasting impact from the most significant act of war against our country on our own soil says something about the spiritual complacency of the American public. Spiritual complacency. You know, I looked up that word complacency. It says a feeling of uncritical satisfaction with oneself. Comfortable. I'm once again comfortable. You see, in our text this morning, Jesus was talking to the church in Laodicea. It was a wealthy city, about 10 miles away from the Colossians, their brothers and sisters in that church. Both of those churches, along with Ephesus in that same region of Turkey, were all established by the Apostle Paul. Most of their wealth came from two sources in that city. One was they were noted for their textile industry. They were the only ones that produced black wool. They raised black sheep. And they would sell this wool, this special wool that was naturally dyed, or not even dyed, color. And they became very wealthy on that industry. They were also known to have a medical school in their city where they trained doctors. And those doctors had come up with a prescription, an ointment for eye illnesses. And people traveled all over to shop in Laodicea to get that line ointment, that eye ointment for their eyes. Most of the citizens there worshiped the god Zeus. The god of the sky. He was the protector of the people. He was the father of all of the gods and the father of humanity as well. So they believed this, that Zeus was this omnipotent, omnipotent god. The people of Laodicea were very comfortable in their wealth. They were very comfortable in their possessions, and apparently even the Laodicean Christians were comfortable as well. Their faith was kind of put on the back burner. It was hard to distinguish them from the rest of the population. They just didn't stand out as we Christians should. Now, without going into too much detail, Jesus says to the church in Laodicea, you're neither hot nor cold. You're lukewarm. You're lukewarm. In other words, a lukewarm Christian doesn't deny Christ, but a lukewarm Christian also doesn't live one's life in the fullest for Christ. They're just sort of a Christian. If you ask most people in the United States, they would tell you, I'm a Christian. You know, when Billy Graham was in London, England, he stopped a man on the street. He says, sir, are you a Christian? He says, heaven no, I'm an Anglican. You see, there's a difference. Denominationalism is okay, but I always tell people, before I'm a Methodist, I am a Christian. That's who I am. I don't care what church you go to or what denomination that you claim. We are Christians first, who happen to worship in the conduit of the denomination that we're involved in. Does that make sense? And so I believe it is a lukewarm condition. This is the gospel according to Chuck. I believe this lukewarm condition is at the root of many of the problems that we face in this nation today. The morality, the lack of love for one another, the selfishness, and the failure to live out the life of a Christian and not just profess to be one, but to live as one. So we don't have to tell people we're a Christian. By our very lives tells others who we are. But you see, it's not just here, it's in Europe too. I've traveled all over Europe. I've been to many countries in Europe, and most churches in Europe today are more museums than houses of worship. You want to see a great king, you want to see a crusader, you go to this church, you take pictures, you go around, you take pictures of the stained glass windows, And they're not houses of worship. They're really basically museums. When I was in Thessaloniki, Greece, which is the Thessalonians, way up north in Macedonia, we went to a Greek Orthodox service, and there were more priests and deacons on the altar than parishioners in the pew. And I thought to myself, are you kidding me? This is Thessaloniki. There are books in the Bible written about this place. And only a handful of people show up for worship? You know, the Archbishop of Canterbury once said this. He said, you know, if the Holy Spirit left the Church of England today, tomorrow business would be as usual. Think about that. The very presence of God taken out, and yet the church will just continue to do what they do every day. Why does it take a tragedy for individuals to turn back to God? I believe that this 20th anniversary of 9/11 that's coming up this Saturday is a call to faith. I really do. It's a clarion call for every Christian to examine him or herself to see where we stand with God and what priority does God take in our lives. What priority does God place in our lives? Is it a casual one, like Jesus said, a lukewarm one? Or is it more of a solid faith that we live out, not just in church, but every day, 7 days a week? You know I'm preaching to the choir. You know why? You're in church. I get it. But I remember Jesus, and I'll end with this. He wasn't knocking on the door of the unbeliever in this text that Barbara read. He was knocking on the door of the believer, the church. And he says, why don't you open the door and let me in so I could sup with you? And so, friends, Jesus is knocking on the door of your heart and mine. And he's asking the question, are you real or are you lukewarm? It's a choice. I have to fight this every single day of my life, because the flesh is always pulling on the spirit. Don't be too hard on yourselves. But remember, we have a God that's big enough to hold on to. And by doing so, holding on to our faith. You believe it? I do too. Amen.